Could it be? The Fountain of Youth?
Now I can live forever.
And never grow old.
You're probably familiar with this scene. It's been in so many movies.
Like Pirates of the Caribbean,
Tangled,
Neverland and Peter Pan.
And in so many books.
Like The Picture of Dorian Gray,
Tuck Everlasting.
And now, research labs and pharmaceutical companies across the world seek to create a real Fountain of Youth.
We're approaching a new frontier in regards to human lifespan. With the rise of anti-aging research and growth in various anti-aging industries, the question of what happens when we extend life is becoming more relevant than ever.
In this podcast, we'll go over the ideas, moral implications, and politics of aging and de-aging tech.
I'm Saya.
I'm Emily.
I'm Julia.
I'm Gargi, and you're listening to State of the Pod.
Okay, so I've actually been really excited to talk about this topic because I recently read this really interesting article in Time magazine about a millionaire who's working on de-aging himself, like on a cellular level, turning back the clock, making himself biologically younger type stuff.
What, so trying to live forever or gain eternal youth or something?
I guess. His official slogan is Don't Die. His name is Brian Johnson. He's a 45-year-old CEO based out of California, and he truly believes that he can find the scientific cure to death and achieve immortality. It's like something out of an old sci-fi movie. He hired a host of doctors and researchers to treat him and experiment on him basically all the time, and keeps to this really strict eating, sleeping, and exercising regimen.
I don't know about you guys, but being experimented on does not seem worth it to live forever.
Wow, it says here he's striving to become 18 years old. Who wants to become 18 years old again?
This guy, apparently. He's spending $2 million a year on it.
Is it working?
Kind of. I mean, according to his doctors, at least. He's already biologically 5 years younger than his age, and apparently his age now differs throughout his body. He's got the bones of a 30-year-old, but the heart of a 37-year-old.
Sounds kind of Frankenstein-y.
Yeah, exactly. And in kind of in line with the Frankenstein's monster thing, a lot of established longevities and aging researchers are pretty skeptical about this research. It's unclear whether anything he's doing is actually going to extend his life significantly in the long run. Plus, all of the work he's putting in, like the super strict diet, a lot of regimented exercise, constantly monitoring himself and his body, might be affecting his quality of life emotionally, although that's just my assumption.
We also need to remember that Brian Johnson is obviously an extreme case of age manipulation through technology. He's trying to achieve immortality, which even cutting-edge researchers who study the science of aging believe is impossible. At least on a genetic level, death is inevitable.
In this episode, though, we're not going to focus too much on that. We're more curious about this fixation on aging, how it's viewed, researched, politicized, and its place in society. Specifically, how the sociocultural and scientific conceptions of aging are changing in the 21st century.
I guess we'll start with the big question then. What exactly does it mean to age?
Defining aging depends on who you ask. The modern definition of aging describes it as the process of growing old, but we can get into a more specific definition about what this means.
Well, it's widely agreed upon that aging is time-dependent and increases how vulnerable you are to disease, injury, and death. If we zoom way into the cellular level, as we age, cells become larger and are less able to multiply and divide. Many cells stop functioning or are not able to do their job. It's kind of like that car you had for so long that the windows won't roll down or it won't even start. It wears down over time. Plus, as you age, you become more sensitive to environmental hazards like air pollution or heat, which can cause its own problems.
Oh, interesting. I hadn't considered the external factors. So aging occurs due to things going inside and outside our bodies.
Exactly. And as you get older, you're less able to maintain homeostasis. Your body is less able to recognize damage and regulate to fix problems.
I think it's important to frame this conversation in the context of what we see happening right now. Brian Johnson is obviously unique in his extreme approach, but as crazy as it seems that someone would spend $2 million a year to get younger, it's not that insane when we consider how much money and attention has been invested in aging research and technology in the past couple years. In 2016, $25 billion was put towards anti-aging globally, and in 2021, it grew into a $37 billion industry.
So, what exactly is included in the anti-aging industry?
Definitions vary, but one study by Case Western Reserve University included five main categories for products and services included in the anti-aging industry: cosmetic treatments and surgery, exercise and therapy, food and beverages, vitamins, minerals, and supplements, and cosmetics and cosmeceuticals. Polls show that some women's concerns about aging begin as early as in their 20s. In fact, the target age for aging prevention products is 25 years old. I'm sure that social media hasn't helped to diminish people's concerns about looking older, and once you start worrying about aging, that probably won't go away. So companies are able to sell more products for a longer period of time, since people are usually customers for life.
And this industry isn't planning on shutting down anytime soon. In fact, the anti-aging industry is projected to grow 6.7% in the next 5 years.
But why is aging so bad in the first place? What is the obsession with de-aging these days?
Well, it might be a sign of changing societal standards. Especially in developed countries, due to improving healthcare and declining birth rates, there is a greater proportion of older adults than in the past. In America, for example, the percentage of the retired population has more than doubled in the past 70 years. The sudden increase in older adults may have led to more stigma around aging.
Right, and if we view aging negatively, it may change the value we place on older adults. With a higher elderly population, they could be seen as more of a liability than sources of wisdom or knowledge.
So, we're talking a little bit about the anti-aging industry and some potential reasons why it's growing, but have researchers actually discovered a way to de-age a living thing?
Yes, actually, scientists have been conducting anti-aging interventions on animals. One method they used was reducing the amount of calories animals consumed without depriving them of nutrients, and they found that caloric restriction is the only intervention that consistently slows the rate of aging and increases both average and maximal lifespan.
Could we do the same thing to humans then?
More research is probably needed. There is a drug used in humans, rapamycin, that uses the same pathways as caloric restriction and directs cells to preserve existing biomolecules instead of building new ones.
Interesting. So if we were to manipulate humans' ability to age, would we stop aging entirely or just kind of slow it down?
It's actually not one or the other. Some people fall into either category. Some people want to stop aging entirely. These people are called transhumanists. They believe that humans have yet to reach their full potential and are willing to modify and enhance our capabilities so we can endure for longer periods of time.
Wait, like turning us into cyborgs?
I don't know that we're really there yet, but yes, they are willing to use digital or biological technologies to achieve immortality. However, most researchers acknowledge that true immortality is highly improbable.
Okay, so just to be sure I'm getting this right, transhumanists want to extend the human lifespan, and then the other side wants to extend human life expectancy?
Actually, yeah, that is how it works. While transhumanists want to push the limit of how long an individual can live, the alternate view is known as decelerated aging. This ideology wants to extend the average number of years humans as a whole live instead of just the individual. The focus is on slowing down the aging process and extending the healthy parts of life.
Does everyone believe that we should try and manipulate humans' ability to age? I feel like a person's values would influence their opinions on extending aging.
That is a good point. I think that's a really interesting question because conversations about aging really come down to what people think it means to be human. I found that there are two main schools of thought, apologism and meliorism.
Apologists take more of a hands-off approach. For them, humans age and that's the way things are. Death is a natural part of life and extending human lifespan is undesirable. On the other side of the spectrum are the meliorists. This group includes people like transhumanists who will do whatever it takes to extend human life.
Like Brian Johnson?
Yeah, exactly like Brian Johnson. He's very clearly fixated on the idea that science and technology will be the means by which we can achieve eternal youth and immortality. All the stuff of myth that is now seemingly within reach due to all of these advances in medicine and tech.
How do these philosophies fit into the idea of progress? Aren't our societies always pushing against the limits of what we can achieve?
Now that you mention that, it does remind me of learning about the push for progress in my history classes. Think about things like science and industrialization. Progress in those fields allowed us to increase our control over nature. For example, vaccines give us control over the spread of disease. These are examples where progress has improved quality of life. At the same time, if you think about it, the root ideas of apologism lie in an ancient world where the idea of progress didn't really exist yet. Back then, the quality of life wasn't ideal, and why would you want to live longer in undesirable conditions?
Yeah, I know I wouldn't want to live longer in a world without running water or AC or anything like that. Expanding kind of on this idea of apologism, I wonder about its connection to religion because I feel like it explains a lot about why people think it's necessary for humans to naturally age. I think most religions center on the belief of one or multiple gods. When you believe in supreme beings, you may feel it's not in your ability to take control of how long you live because prolonging life goes beyond what was intended for you.
Furthermore, many religions believe in an afterlife.
Right, yeah, there already exists kind of this distinction between life on Earth and whatever follows. If you think about it that way, immortality kind of exists in a sense, just not within one body.
So death is necessary. The earthly body needs to die to continue on.
Right.
Could you then argue that progress does exist for apologists? It's different from meliorists in that it focuses more on the idea that current things need to move on for new groups to come to fill the gaps. But it works.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say that counts. Meliorists see progress as pushing the limits of what we can achieve. Apologists see death as a sort of progress because it makes room for new generations.
So, in this case, the progress that we're working towards is curing aging. Whether that means slowing it down or extending lifespan, can we define this as curing aging?
Well, the idea that we can cure aging fits into the larger discussion of a phenomenon known as medicalization. In other words, we've begun to conceptualize aging as something that belongs in the domain of medicine, science, or technology, which is what we sort of alluded to in the beginning, when we talked about how new scientific fields such as biogerontology have emerged within the past few years.
Sociologists and medical anthropologists have been discussing this trend of medicalization since the mid to late 20th century. According to Dr. Peter Conrad, a professor of sociology at Brandeis, it was originally used by social scientists in the 1970s to describe how human problems, such as hyperactivity in children, came to be defined as medical conditions like ADHD that could be treated by medical institutions. Medicalization of conditions has been increasing since the 1970s, and aging specifically has been subject to medicalization with the categorization of dementia and Alzheimer's as a formal disease.
I guess as a consequence of this, conversations around aging and end-of-life processes, including death itself, have increasingly been placed in the domain of science and technology. In other words, as we've started to treat diseases associated with aging, aging itself has become treatable, much like any other disease.
Okay, so if I'm understanding you correctly, then we might be able to cure aging?
This seems to be what we're moving towards, right? Looking at those trends in research we were talking about, which is also tied into market incentives.
Right, we touched briefly on the rise of the anti-aging industry, which could be an entire podcast topic in and of itself.
Yeah, clearly there's an interest in changing how we think about aging. Like, we're starting to think about it as something we can overcome, technologically cure, etc. As we've just talked about, it's been influenced by scientific thinking and by major industries, like pharmaceutical, cosmetic companies, etc. It's worth reflecting on how these larger social forces are shaping aging and whether that's happening with the informed consent of consumers.
Wow, that's really interesting. If I'm hearing you right, then aging is becoming more a medicalized and commercial issue and less a natural part of the personal lived experience?
Yeah, exactly. Aging is coming under the domain of social institutions that can influence how we all think about aging, and whether that's good or bad, and what that really means for the future of aging and humanity as a whole, is something that many scholars in many fields, social science, anthropology, even economics, are discussing. I guess within the scope of this podcast, what we're really curious about is what happens if we do cure aging. Like, what would a world really look like where we slow down aging significantly and extend lifespan or stop aging altogether?
Would this result in an improved quality of life? Does living longer necessarily mean living better?
Not necessarily. If we extend healthy periods of life, we may also extend periods of disability. Additionally, if we try to decrease vulnerability to one disease, we could unintentionally increase our exposure to another disease.
Okay, so if you think about it, curing aging kind of fundamentally changes our connection to our humanity, which is crazy. As humans, we're embodied beings, and what that means is that we have a physical body. Aging and dying, they're universal. It's something that unites every person. In order to slow down aging, we would need to modify our bodies, because they're going to age no matter what we do. But at what point do we lose our embodiment? And if humans become disconnected to our bodies, are we still human?
In other words, is aging inherent to truly being human?
Right, or to being alive in general. Most organisms we know age, albeit in different ways to humans. Everything dies eventually, like we said. It's considered impossible at this point to technologically prevent death altogether.
Still, we're thinking a lot about how changing our relationship to age and the concept of aging affects us and our perception of the human experience. We all grow old, get wrinkly, need more care later in life, but with the advent of more widely advertised anti-wrinkle creams, skin smoothing serums, cosmetic concealing of gray hair, etc., how does thinking about aging as an illness that can be cured affect how we're going to interact with each other?
Historically, when certain identifiers are seen as mental or physical illnesses, it changes how they are seen, and usually in a negative way. Take, for example, LGBTQ people. If being queer is seen as an illness, then it presents the idea that it can and should be cured, which is a pretty destructive mindset for people who identify that way.
I think this ties back into our conversation about medicalization. It really is a double-edged sword, because if you categorize something as a disease, that could give someone the helpful treatment they need, but you're also placing a facet of someone's lived experience under a label, which can kind of restrict them. It takes away some of their control and their agency.
If we narrow down our focus, presenting death as a choice instead of a necessity will also have implications on the medical community by changing the patient and doctor relationship. Think about it this way. If technology becomes available for patients to choose how long they live and when to die or not, they have the freedom to choose whether or not to accept it in the first place. The way things are right now, people go to doctors to cure and care for the ailments that come from being in their bodies that age. We are treating the symptoms of aging. But if aging is seen as a disease to be treated, then aging bodies are no longer seen as inherent to being human. They become a failure instead, something to be avoided.
So doctors are seen less as figures of authority and more as dispensers of treatments based on patient demand.
Almost in a way, yeah. More importantly, as human bodies are modified, doctors become less and less of people who necessarily save lives, and more of as architects for constructing desirable bodies. What exactly are the moral implications of that?
Before we move further, I do think we need to keep in mind that humans are already manipulating aging. Progress in medicine has already extended human lifespans and life expectancies. Imagine what the world would have looked like if we hadn't been optimistic that we could reduce infant mortality.
But now it becomes a question of how far we push that line. When do we stop?
There are also a multitude of ethical implications we need to consider.
Exactly. If the technology does become available, it wouldn't be accessible to everyone.
Yeah, but then I guess the question becomes, should the people who have the option to live longer be denied that because it's not available to everyone? Should the money used to research living longer instead be putting into creating more equality in how people live, like improving the global quality of life?
These are all valid questions, and we have to ground these in the socio-political context of aging in general.
Yeah, if we do manage to cure or significantly stall aging with current technology, how does society ensure that there are enough resources to care for the increasing number of elderly?
A fair question, and one that we really don't have a good answer to so far. In many countries, there are fears of pensions or social security funds running out due to an increasing elderly and shrinking working age population. It also depends on what type of aging exactly is being cured. If we merely prolong people's lives without accounting for the potential consequences, then these aforementioned aging issues will be greatly exacerbated.
Right, and on the flip side, if de-aging technologies allow people to be physically younger, then they could work longer. But it does seem morally dubious to force people to work longer just because they're also living longer. Furthermore, raising the retirement age isn't exactly a political winner. I mean, look at the riots in France over this, for one.
Yeah, that is a good point. So I do think a lot of what we talked about is looking at how aging affects politics at a societal level. But how do de-aging and aging intersect with politics at the campaigning level?
Well, especially at the upper, more impersonal levels of the federal government, there seems to be a lot of elder resentment currently. Look at Biden and Trump's accusations of dementia. A lot of people, especially young people nowadays, say that they would just vote for someone else who's young in general, almost regardless of their political views.
Right, especially with Gen Z, there seems to be a fueling movement to get younger politicians into government, regardless of where they lay on the political spectrum.
Okay. So, in summary, our conversation has brought up some of the benefits and potential consequences of extending human lives and thinking of aging as a disease. This is a pretty complex topic, and there's really no right or wrong answer.
Yeah, trying to prolong human lives isn't inherently good or bad. It depends on how you think about it.
Most of the time, extending human lives is a product of improving general quality of life, which is a good thing. But if the end goal is immortality, we move into a moral gray area, because that goal is hard to reach.
Yeah, exactly. Extending human lives in and of itself might not be a great mindset, but it's important to think about improving general quality of life, which can then lead to longer lifespan. So for example, maybe we should focus on doing larger social good, like promoting better sanitation practices and increasing access to good quality healthcare on a large scale.
Exactly. Many humans want to live longer because they seek more meaningful experiences, not just more time itself. They want to live a fulfilling life.
Yeah, I guess the next question becomes, what exactly does it mean to live a fulfilling life?
Well, that's a topic for another episode.
I'm Saya.
I'm Emily.
I'm Julian.
And I'm Gargi. Thanks for tuning in to Who Wants to Live Forever? What it means to age in the 21st century.
And we'll see you in another episode on State of the Pod.